Thanks for listening to The Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at
Two-time UFC heavyweight champ Frank Mir is going to come in here. He's great, man. Getting to a lot of stuff with Frank and have a lot of laughs with him. News is coming up as well. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. After last year, we all deserve some summer fun. But be on the lookout for travel scams by cyber criminals who want to steal your identity. Independently verify travel deals with the company. Protect yourself. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info at risk on the internet. In an instant, cybercriminals could harm your finances and credit. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your Social Security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they will send you an alert. They're LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com and use promo code Adam for 25% off.
It's hard to be cool stuff and lose. Adam's monthly nut. Adam's monthly nut.
You heard Dick. A new nut has arrived. July's nut has for you two ACS koozies to keep that thin can of seltzer cold in the ball-melting summer heat. Brother Artisan's CBD oil to keep you chill in the ball-melting summer heat. The Hangover Secret. A hangover cure to make sure that after a night of heavy drinking, you don't die the next day in the ball-melting summer heat. And of course, a bottle of your choosing. Head to CorollaDrinks.com to sign up for 1 month or to keep the shipments coming. Prep your mails box for Adam's Monthly Nut.
Frank Mir, UFC legend, Frankie Mir, two-time heavyweight champion, has joined us once again. Good to see you, Frank.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
I was looking into your bio, found this inspiring. You wrestled in high school and you lost your first 9 matches.
Yeah, it was something like that. It was a depressing couple weeks.
And then your senior year, the next year, you went 44-1.
Yeah. Quick learning curve.
Was that what that was?
Well, just like anything else, when you first do something new, you're kind of out of your comfort zone and people get, you know, you make mistakes. And at least, that was a lesson I learned that, you know, just keep hammering away at things. And eventually, you know, if you're constantly in there trying, you're going to find the ways to succeed.
When the UFC, how long had the UFC been around before you entered the UFC? Because people, I was watching the UFC fight with my son, and he's 15, last week, and he was telling his friends, like, oh, the old UFC was crazy. No weight divisions, guys showing up in board shorts, another guy showing up in gis, guys with ponytails, another guy grabbed the ponytail and just mashed his head against his knee. Like, it was such a crazy circus.
Yeah, well, the UFC first itself, the promotion was, what, 93, I think, was the first show. But I actually came on board when the Fertittas had purchased it. Lorenzo, being on the Athletic State Commission for Boxing, was able to use those connections to be able to help actually, you know, get it sanctioned and get it back as far as a sport that could be on pay-per-view. Because for a while there, I think from, like, what, 97 or 96, it was basically Indian reservations and – you know, only VHS. It was like, you know, basically extreme backyard type fighting. Right. It was almost like the genre we were in. And then once they got a hold of it in 2001 or 2000, and then switched it back to what we know today.
It's evolved so much. I know your daughter's fighting now. You have an 18-year-old daughter?
I do. She just turned 18. She's always been, my kids obviously trained martial arts, and I've always been a big pusher as far as, you know, it's a good way of life. I don't necessarily think just because you like boxing doesn't mean that you have to be a professional boxer. I think being in the gym and training and different versions of martial arts, is it's good for you.
Sure.
But my daughter took it one step further than I wanted her to, and she decided that, you know, she was going to be a professional fighter, and the writing was on the wall. I was either going to be a part of it or watch from the sidelines.
If it was a movie, you guys end up in the ring together. You know what I mean? Like fighting against each other. This is the movie version.
Is she, she's 2-0?
Yeah, she fought two fights already and was very dominant. The one girl, actually, she had choked her out, which was unconscious for about a good 2 or 3 minutes. And it was funny because actually my, you know, someone had walked up and I forgot, I think it was her. She's like, Dad, is she going to be okay? I'm like, and in my mind, I'm like, I don't know. I've never seen anybody asleep that long from a choke.
Yeah, proud of you, honey.
Yeah. You choke.
Good job. Little girl.
You choke people out. Most of the time they tap. Sometimes they don't. They just go limp. Some of it, I think, well, you tell me, some of it's like a constitution. Like, there's some guys that are like, I don't tap. So if I just go under, I go under.
Yeah, and as far as chokes are concerned, there's never really any damage. You know, so I'm okay with that. You fight to the last second, you go out on your shield, you know, but there's no lasting effects. Now, if someone has your shoulder in a lock and you're going to tear your rotator cuff,
you gotta
hey,
tap.
Man, yeah, tap. And like, otherwise, you might have your career ended, you know, or you know, at least it's going to be put on hold for a while you're trying to heal.
But usually, they either tap or they go out. But when they go out momentarily.
Right, just kind of
the ref gets you off. They see you go limp. Sometimes they do this weird morbid thing where they'll like lift the person's hand and let it just flutter back down to the canvas and go, oh, that person's out. But they don't stay out that long.
No.
So you're
within seconds they come back. Once the circulation starts, it was this weird situation. And the fight was on Icon. If you're watching UFC Fight Pass, Bella's second fight, and you'll see, I mean, we're in the celebrating in the ring and then we're trying to organize things and they're still working on her in the corner. Almost like I see that with strikes. You know, people get knocked out with a punch. It could be a few minutes before they get up. A choke, that was it was my first experience in 20 years of MMA fighting that I ever saw that.
I guess I know how you're going to answer this, but maybe not. I know how I would answer it, because if I would say, were you more nervous for one of your fights or more nervous for one of her fights?
You know, more, you would think I'm more nervous for her fight, and I am, because you're less, and the reason being is that you're less in control. At least if I'm nervous, I can focus my nerves on what I'm going to do positively. All right, they throw a jab, I'm going to slip this way. Okay, they do this. This is their main technique, and this is what they fall back on. I'm going to do it. You can play this X's and O's game with yourself to keep you distracted, and you feel a sense of actually accomplishing something. You're doing something. Whereas when it's your kid out there fighting, you know, there's only so much I can do, you know, only so much preparation and advice. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's her in there by herself. So that part is, that's nerve-wracking.
I feel the same way about my daughter with sex.
Oh, my God.
I can't be in the van. I don't know where the van is.
I'll teach you everything I know.
That's right.
It's up to you now.
I want you to slip, though, man. We've slipped, Bob. Get on your bike. famously, I always talk to Frank about this because he, you know, speaking of tapping out and submissions and stuff, Frank's an expert at that. And the Brock Lesnar fight is just the best. And I think I got it. You got him in a foot bar or like an ankle bar or something?
Yeah.
And I should set the table. I mean, Brock Lesnar is such a beast.
Monster.
Such a monstrous.
He's a professional wrestler.
Beast. But big by professional wrestler stand. And when he went to the MMA, he was a scary dude. I mean, he's such a large human being. He's Brock Lesnar, you know, at the height of his powers, is just probably one of the most intimidating figures in sports. If you see pictures of the guy. And Frank had to get in.
Oh, man, Gina.
Oh, boy.
With him.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. He looks like a villainous action figure.
Yes, it feels like something that was CGI.
Right.
Yeah, no, big, strong guy.
Big, strong guy. But But yeah, and he was probably
no one could beat him.
Yeah, and that fight was seemed like it was going his way at the beginning, but I don't know. You walk us through it.
Yeah, no, he got the takedown in the fight, and you know, national champion wrestler. I think he only lost like 5 matches in college, you know, and so he was, you know. Had a great base, which is funny because when I first signed up to fight him, a lot of people only knew him as the pro wrestler. That's where he made his name and mark on the world. So people go, oh, the pro wrestler. I'm like, guys, I know he pro wrestles, but the guy is an actual legitimate wrestler. You know what I mean? Like, he wrestled in college, national champ, you know, All-American multiple times. He knows how to wrestle too, which is the main part of our sport as far as positioning. So sure enough, he took me down and was able to, you know, throw in a lot of shots, but I was able to survive. And he made his mistake and just, you know, put his guard down for a second, or just not even put his guard down. Just he wasn't aware of all the different techniques we were capable of. And I do a lot of things that typically big guys don't do. I can fight from the bottom position. And so, he left his limb there and I took it.
Was it an ankle bar or something?
No, it was actually a leg lock. So I was putting pressure basically on his knee. So it would break his, tears your ACL and stuff.
Yeah, where we're watching him, he's got you down on the ground, and you just...
Yeah, and you see that me driving forward.
He's
desperately tapping.
He gave you a good tap.
And yeah. and it was almost like you just couldn't be bothered to notice. He was like, no,
well,
stop.
Actually, here's how the rules work. I don't stop when my opponent taps, because that's not the end of the fight. The end of the fight is when my opponent taps. The referee acknowledges that he's tapping, and he tells me to stop.
Got it.
Because it's happened before in fights. If you feel a guy tapping, and then you stop because you're being a good guy, or you think that's the end of the race.
And he can overtake you.
And he goes, I didn't tap. The referee didn't see it. The fight keeps going on, you know? Mm.
That's good.
Yeah. That's why you can't text if you're ref.
No, and if you see me, if you watch there in the fight, and I've done that before, like one time I choked a guy unconscious. Well, I held the choke until the referee, like I came over and I even said something to her. I was like, hey, I think he's out. And he did what you called the morbid little hand test. Mm-hmm. He picked his arm up and he didn't hold it up, because it's sometimes hard when guys' heads are in certain positions to see, are you awake or not? You could just be trying to focus on not going to sleep and controlling. So seeing if someone's eyes are open is not a great indication, because people go to sleep with their eyes open all the time. So that's why you kind of get some kind of confirmation. If you feel the referee grabbing your limb, you have to kind of give some kind of light. Hey, I'm here. Don't stop the fight. If you just grab your arm and let it go limp and you don't fight back, well, that's on you. You know what I mean? Obviously, you're unconscious. And so I hold submissions, so I don't apply more pressure. So if you watch there, as I put the leg lock on him, I applied pressure to try to break his leg. And as soon as he tapped, I stopped. I didn't apply any more pressure, because at that moment, I know he's relinquishing. I just didn't let go. So it's kind of like, I got you, but I'm not letting go until the referee comes. And I was actually kind of surprised. It took me a second. I'm like, okay, where's the ref? I feel him tapping. Like, that's why you see me looking around. I'm like, all right, what's going on here? Why are we not stopping the fight?
The greatest power move is beating a guy up or submitting a guy and then summoning the ref. Like, I think there was, I want to put that on my list. Yeah. I got a list of things I want to do. I think it was probably, maybe it was Larry Holmes fighting. I don't think it was when he beat up Ali, when Ali was kind of past his prime, but there was a Larry Holmes and maybe a Marvis Frazier or something. Joe Frazier's son fought for a little while or something. At some point, Larry Holmes just had him in the corner and was just peppering him with jabs and just teeing off on him. And at a certain point, Larry Holmes said to the ref, why don't you come in here?
Please intervene.
He's like, I'm going to use my left hand to jab, and I'm going to use my right hand to wave you in to put an end to this. He probably didn't say charade, but maybe said charade.
Right.
I think Larry pronounces it differently. Right. But yeah, that's a power move when you're getting the ref.
He's had enough.
To stop it. I would do that very early in the first round to see if it worked. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's one thing about tapping that's interesting in our sport. Like, you know, anybody, but you get caught with a knockout and you could have been winning. You didn't really, you didn't cry uncle. You got caught with a shot and put out, right? But there is always that element of tapping to another human being that you're basically saying, hey, uncle, please stop. Yeah. Would you please stop applying pressure on my joint? And I think there's a little bit more of an ownership over another fighter of, I didn't just burn you and catch you with a shot. Like, I made you actually tell me you want no more.
It was Larry Holmes and Marvis Frazier? Did I get that right? Holy shit.
Yeah.
In between jabs. Come here.
Also, you know, Larry, you don't have to completely destroy the guy. And by the way, there was enough. He ate enough big shots with his right hand to... I bet the ref did a don't tell me my business.
Oh,
I bet he let him eat an extra four shots because he's like, hey, man, I'll do the ref and you do the punching. You don't tell me what to do.
He's doing the punching and the ref right now.
That's a power move there.
Seriously. That's pretty dominant.
Pretty dominant.
Yeah, Holmes is one of the best heavyweight boxers I thought of all time.
Completely agree. Just, you know, maybe he does get his due by people saying he doesn't get his due over and over again. Maybe that is your due.
Yeah, I just don't think he had the epic battles that sometimes, that, you know, like, look, Muhammad Ali had Joe Frazier and then
he had Marvis.
George Foreman, you know. Yeah,
he didn't. It so much of it is about timing, and obviously you need an opponent. And if you're going to have Hall of Famers like Joe Frazier and George Foreman and all those epic guys, and then he comes in the 80s and he's got a bunch of dudes you've never heard of.
Pre-Tyson.
Yeah, kind of pre-Tyson, yeah. And he's fighting guys like Ronaldo Snipes and stuff. It's just names you just never... Not part of the zeitgeist or Marvis Frazier. You know, people are like, oh, I don't know, Joe Frazier had a son. Like,
you know, it's kind of sad, actually. The two fights I know of Joe Frazier's kid is that one. And the other one with Tyson completely put him up with uppercuts. It was like almost holding him up. Do you remember that fight?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, still it's before my time still. But I think I was a little kid when it happened. But anyways, ESPN Classics, you can see it. And caught him with uppercuts. And you can see that, you know, Frazier wanted to go down physically. His body was trying to find. Gravity was coaxing him down. And Mike Tyson's uppercuts were trying to deny
the
that.
The only thing that's keeping you on your feet is getting an uppercut.
Yeah. That's a rough day in the office.
Horrible.
Chris, I'll tell you what I need you to do. I need you to take the Marvis Frazier with Larry Holmes and then the Marvis Frazier with Mike Tyson and put it into one loop of him being dismantled, because when I talk to my son about podcasting, and he's going to go, I don't need to go to college, old man. I could do a podcast. I go, you know, Joe Frazier, one of the greatest fighters of all time, but he had a son. He had a son. And he wanted to go in his old man's business.
Yeah.
Let's see how he fared. Let me go ahead and dim the lights. Let me pop this up.
He wasn't without ability. He went pro.
You see, it doesn't always work out.
Yeah, that's fine. I like where you're going with that. I see it. Yeah. Cautionary tale.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay,
I'm just kidding,
this.
Chris. You don't have strength to get everybody. I still want to see poor Marvis Frazier. Oh, that uppercut.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Please let me die.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So you shouldn't always enter the family business.
That's right. Careful what you wish for.
There can be advantages, and like, sometimes maybe you're just not cut out for it.
Frank's daughter's dominating.
Well, that's true, but there is a... boxing is so corrupt, you know, promoters. Oh, we got Frazier. Oh, we'll just put the name on the marquee. Like, this is going to sell some tickets. Let's put him in there.
Yeah,
too soon.
Boxing has a much larger disparity of talent fighting each other. You have guys that have, you know, 20 fights, and, you know, and 18 of them are people that don't even have a winning record. You know, it's like amazing sometimes the difference in opponents until they get to the top level. Where that's one thing with, you know, MMA, UFC, and the different shows, you know, you're fighting guys. That's why very rarely in our sport do you see a guy with a perfect record, because there's so many tight battles. I mean, just to get to the title contingency, the guy probably fought four or five guys who are all top five, you know.
Yeah, I always say that, you know, legends of the sport, you know, you go Tito Ortiz, it's like that is 17 and 12 or something,
right.
You know, it's like that would not work in boxing. Well,
right.
At
it's
all.
Like a testament to both teams with a low scoring game.
Right.
Yeah. And it's also what makes it such an exciting sport, which is in boxing, oftentimes, more often than not, you kind of know who's going to win going in. Like you
think
about
the A side is.
Yeah, you kind of when Tyson was in his prime, you knew he was going to win. The question is, which round was he going to get the knockout, or how was it going to be, uppercut or the overhand? Like, but you knew You knew with Larry Holmes when no one could beat him. He knew, you know, when he got in with Marvis Frazier, you know Larry Holmes is going to win the fight. What rounds are going to knock him out in? I can't tell you how many UFC fights were just like, who's going to win this fight? I have no idea. And neither do the experts. You talk to every MMA expert, they pick the wrong guy half the time.
Very hard to be consistent. Yeah, another thing too, like even like, you know, less noticeable as far as even names. You can go to local boxing matches, or, you know, like if you have shows in Vegas where it's not necessarily a, you know, a Showtime or HBO type televised. You know, it's a good fight. There'd be some notable fighters on there. But you can sit there in the audience and watch. You'll see one guy walk in and go, wow, all right, that guy's a professional fighter. And then you'll see his opponent come in. You're like, holy hell, like they sanction this? Like, wow, like that guy's going to die. You know what I mean? Like, what? And that you just don't see as much in MMA.
I got a thing, you know, I root for the guys with the least tattoos first, then once in a while I'll go with the guy that
the true
like
rebels now in our world, no tattoos.
That's right.
But then after that, I go with the guy with the worst physique, because I love it when a guy with a dad bod just opens a can of whoop ass on some ripped dude. I feel like that's a win for all the dads
for you,
out there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's a personal, win.
That brings a smile to my face.
You want to talk about stem cell therapy, by the way? Because I know you're here to plug something.
Well, no, just different things as far as career-wise that have helped me out immensely, and that's actually BioAccelerator. I don't know how much interest you have in doing stem cells, but, you know, a lot of times I tell people that, you know, things get too much hype. You're like, all right, there has to be a catch. This has to – maybe you're overselling it. And really with the stem cells, I went down in December of 2020, or was it 2019? Or the year before last, sorry, 2020. And the amazing results turned my career around big time. That's why I ended up doing a professional boxing match here just recently in April and competed against a world champion. My body was pretty beaten up towards the end of my MMA career or towards it. And it just made it painful to want to go compete and train, do anything. It's discouraging, you know, and it takes you 15 minutes to get out of bed in the morning, you know? And you start questioning yourself, oh, is my age, you know, father time, you know, comes for everybody. Is it true now? Is it my time to hang it up? And then the stem cell completely changed. I mean, I'm honest with people. They're like, okay, well, is it too good to be true? Too good to be true. I'm like, well, here's the catch. Here's the part that makes it go, okay, it's extremely phenomenal as far as how it helps your body, but it's not the cheapest thing in the world. So I tell people, like, oh, there is a catch. You're going to have to be, you know, this isn't cheap. You know, like, you know, you are going to get what you pay for.
What's the process?
As far as, well, when you go in there on my side, I mean, they do these embryonic stem cells. So it's like women that have given birth, you know, everything's fine. They can donate the cord blood.
Right.
And so through the donations, they are able to pull through. And the guys that understand the science more, but basically pull these stem cells that are blank cells that you can put in the body. And they clean them. They make sure everything, you know, is safe. And then you go in there and you do two different versions of it, basically. You have what's called like a systemic, where I get an IV. So you sit down there, and BioAccelerator, everybody pretty much always does the IV also on top of specific joints. So I have torn labrums in my shoulder, and my knees are all, you know, I've had multiple knee surgeries. So obviously I was like, hey, when I go in, can you focus on my shoulders and my knees and I had two other injury areas where I'm like, okay, I broke my hand. I'm like, okay, this old break, and it constantly, you know, rears its head up and gives me a hard time. So you sit there with a new IV, and that the stem cells that go intravenously wherever your body gives off an inflammation response. So, you know, there's an injury, your body's pissed off, it gives off a signal which causes swelling, the inflammation response, but also it helps your body send repair cells there to help fix what's going on. Well, now the way I was explained to me, I'm like, well, I have 40-year-old cells in my body that are trying to fix this injury. Now they put in, you know, basically, you know, weeks-old cells that multiply much faster, more efficiently, and stronger. And so now your healing process just goes through the roof and just accelerates all the things and makes possible what isn't possible anymore. It's like, hey, look, you're in your 40s or you're in your 50s. You know, things just aren't going to go as well as it was when you were 18. But you can actually turn back that clock by borrowing, you know, basically, you know, brand new cells to put in your body.
We're in the future.
How,
we're there.
How does it work? You know, you see all these, you hear people talk about all sorts of memory and you know, my dad's going to turn 90. I was sitting with him the other day, and it's like everything. He just goes, I can't think of the word. Like, I can't think. I can't think of the name of this guy. I can't think of the word. You know, it's you notice it as you get older. You go, what was that? Just play Pop Warner football with that guy. What was that dude's name? Like that, it kicks in. I hear about stem cell as it pertains to the muscles and the joints, but the physical part, but. I don't know. I feel like you got blood going through your brain.
Well, here's the point. You have a blood-brain barrier. So if you put a lot of, if you put a medicine in your artery, you know, it doesn't necessarily get to your brain. Your brain is very protected. Your body, keeps bacteria and different things from entering there so that you have this barrier that doesn't allow a lot of things to transfer over. So you could take certain medicines, but it's never going to get to your brain. And actually just doing the stem cells intravenously, your brain is one area that it has a hard time getting to. So what they do there is they'll actually give you basically a spinal tap. You sit there, they pull out spinal fluid so they don't put too much in you. And this is a surgical procedure. So you're basically in a room with a guy who's, a neurologist, and they mix your spinal fluid with the stem cells, whatever it is. And so that way, if they take out 20 cc's, I don't know the exact numbers, throwing it out there, they're only injecting back 20 cc's of liquid, but now the liquid is mixed with stem cell. And so now they can pump it directly into your cord. And so that way it goes right to the brain and benefits. Some people, my friend did that version of it. And I was at the gym, McMahon did that version of it. They call it like their concussion protocol type.
Oh.
So guys that have had, like myself, who've had multiple, head injuries, you have inflammation going on inside the head, and this can go through and help repair those things.
Well, I was going to say I'd do it, but that was such an awesome question I asked. Maybe it's unnecessary.
Yeah, you seem like you're decent still, and I wouldn't say you're over the edge just yet with the sharp.
No, but it is interesting that why just the joints? Why not the noggin? 100%. And I never would have thought about this barrier, but going with the spinal tap, and then guys that have been concussed a lot, but I'm also thinking selfishly, comedians, they get a little older, they kind of get a little fuzzy up there. I mean, I wonder if that's
last time I was there, I only did my joints and I did the intravenously one. They were basically the week they tried to fit me in. I wasn't able to get into the surgical room to do the surgical procedure part as far as the concussion protocol, I think is what they had named it there. So this next time I'm going down in November, I'm bringing my daughter because she has injuries too already at this point, and so we're going to go there, and that's actually one of the procedures I'll be able to. So next time I come in, I could be more of a testimony if it works or not. Well, you'll be able to have a before and after, how I'm speaking now.
Yeah.
And then let's see how
I imagine when you come out, you're like, indubitably.
That always makes you feel a little bit better for the amount of concussions I've had. Is for the most part, I'll look at other guys when they speak, and I'm never going to say names, but there's certain fighters that have been fighting for a while, and you hear them talk, and you're like, ooh, that doesn't sound good. That's rough. And I'm self-conscious about my own, so I'm always like, I'll tell my wife, I'm like, hey, I think this is one of those things that when it's happening to you, you don't know.
Right.
You know what I mean? Everybody else is going to be like, hey, man, Frank, what's going on with him? Like, I know, man, it's sad what happened, right? So I'm like, please don't let me be that guy that doesn't know. You know what I mean? If I need a sippy cup, just please let me know.
That's a good partner. We've talked about that. The alligator skin boots guy.
Right,
the partner needs to make sure.
Needs to say something. Yeah.
Boxing is checkers and MMA is chess.
Yes, that is Tino. And maybe you should get, or maybe Thomas the Hitman Hearns could probably use a little.
What's with the alligator boots?
Check and see if he's wearing alligator boots.
No, it's that if you're not wearing alligator boots, your wife makes you go back in and put them on.
Funny. I'm wearing crocodile boots, so yeah.
Jesus Christ. Oh, you're going to get your ass kicked.
You're 100% right, Jeannie.
Be fair to me, I say ostrich.
No, ostrich.
And I say purple.
Those are pretty badass.
The theme, that is funny. What are the chances? Yeah, I always say check the footwear before you do the analogy.
I know, stupid me.
I say this all the time, but it's a broader discussion, which is like
You said guys and alligator boots are homo.
And what other chance I walked
full
in?
Full stop.
Saltwater crocodile. Like, so what's up with the animal boots? What's going on?
Full stop. End of sentence.
Especially the way the room's set up. The door's behind me, right?
Oh, my God. I'd have to eat my way through that acoustic tile.
You said it was maybe a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. You could beat the ass of any guy who wore alligator boots in the studio.
I said most guys.
Play the tape.
Any guy.
We got video, right?
No, I always say, so here's the analogy.
All right.
People make a lot of dumb decisions. Now, I'm not talking about footwear. I'm just talking about bad decisions. I've had it a lot where it's like, I'll leave myself out of the equation. But I've seen so many people go like storm into Jimmy Kimmel's office and tell him to fuck off. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm quitting this job or whatever. And life doesn't go well for them after that. And my thing is, I always say, where are the wives? Where are the people in this person's life? Who is telling – somebody should tap them on the shoulder and go, do not do this. Yeah. We have kids. This is a bad idea. You're not that funny. This is probably not going to work. I need this money. Whatever it is. Realistic wife.
I 100% agree with you.
First question I ask when everyone does the – batshit move or does torpedoes their own career, does that thing, talk to the hand or fuck off. I'm always like, I don't really blame them. They're hotheads. They're idiots. But I do kind of wonder,
their circle.
Is there somebody around them that could talk them off that ledge and have. Now, the reality is they have yes people. They have people like encouraging them to do that shit. And then the analogy, the very poor analogy with the boots. I said, the guy who wears the purple ostrich boots and leaves the house, it's not his fault. He thinks he looks good in those boots. It's his wife's fault for letting him leave the house. And those are not your boots.
Your boots
are black and shiny and masculine.
Stomp worthy.
So you know what's funny is actually almost every time a high-level athlete gets in trouble, I always say that. I'm like, oh, they don't have a wife like mine. Because here's the thing. I don't think a lot of our athletes or a lot of guys that are able to be fighters and push themselves extreme, they're not bad people. They just have – what enables a guy like myself to walk into a cage against a Brock Lesnar is that my risk assessment is probably not the same as other people's risk assessment. Mm-hmm. Other people go, hey, man, you got about a 1% chance of pulling this off. You know, the pitcher on a mound at a major game and it's all on the line and he has to throw this last final pitch. Everybody else is choking and freaking out and this guy is going to pull it off because our risk assessment is not probably as sharp as somebody who goes, hey man, you know that this is probably not going to work out for you. The chances aren't in your favor, and people fold because that's good math.
Right.
To be a high level athlete or be a professional fighter, you got to be bad at math. You have to sit there and go, okay, I'm going to do the numbers, and the numbers say it's probably going to not be in my favor, but I don't care. Mm. I can pull this off. I'll win. I'll find a way. So that same personality that benefits us in a cage or on a football field or on a pitching mound or whatever. All of a sudden, now you've had a couple drinks, and it's like, well, you shouldn't be driving. Yeah, maybe you shouldn't be driving, but I can drive. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people, people like that, you know, our inhibition control is not that great, you know?
Yeah.
So having a good wife, like my wife, is, you know, sometimes I tell people the difference between myself and like a John Jones, it's not that I've always made the best decisions in my life. Like, he's not always made the best decisions. But I have a wife that is up my, you know, it's constantly watching. Hey, you know, what? No, that's a horrible idea. What were you thinking? You know,
like,
and so constantly is that anchor that I think a lot of professional athletes, a lot of high level, I mean, hell, business traders, you know, Wall Street guys, they need somebody that pulls the chain a little bit. Like, hey, chill out, dude. You got to relax.
Obviously, the footwear is a blind spot for her, but I get what you mean. Yes, because this is where these guys go, I got a business prop for you, fighter. You've heard of frozen yogurt? This is frozen gravy. We franchise.
Tell me why.
I was like, I'm cutting it. I'm getting my checkbook out. You made a bad decision, but the wife wouldn't let you do that. Well, speaking of John Jones, I was just talking to my son about John Jones and getting in with Francis Ngannou. I mean, you're uniquely qualified to discuss this. Francis is such a crazy specimen.
Oh, yeah.
And a question I was thinking, and I didn't know if I could answer it. He, the UFC heavyweight is 260 the cutoff? I mean, does
he 265.
He has to cut weight to get to the heavyweight?
He's a little bit, I'm sure. He's extremely lean.
Oh my God.
I think he weighs right there about 260, 262. So far, usually you can tell when a guy has to cut weight is if he comes in right at, 265,
Right.
So that means you probably didn't weigh 265. You had to make sure you made the cutoff of 265.
All right. The guy did a cut because he stops at the cut. Right. If he weighs in at 262, he didn't do a cut.
Yeah, you're not going to cut an extra 3 pounds just to...
Right. So John Jones has the frame. I mean, he's a super tall guy.
Right. Both his brothers in the NFL. He's got good stock.
He's got good stock. But discuss this with Sonny. Brothers in the NFL. His frame can carry more. He fought at 205. He has put on muscle.
Yeah, he's good right now.
Is this fight going to happen? Are they making this fight?
I hope so. I think that right now, the only thing that might be, honestly, and this isn't anything that I know, just my paying attention, is, Francis has been vocal about, hey, how come, the Paul brothers are making multiple millions of dollars, for a show. We're getting as much viewership on one of our UFC fights, but I'm getting paid, I think it was $700,000 or $800,000. I'm not even making $1 million and I'm the UFC heavyweight champ of the world.
He didn't make $1 million for his last fight?
At least from the tweet or post that I was, I think he said he made like $700,000 or $800,000 as his pay to, which is still, that's still decent pay for an MMA fighter, but be the UFC heavyweight champ on a show that's bringing in, $30-40 million and the headline gets, less than $1 million, then I can see how that would upset people. So I think that he's being vocal about that, and he's in a unique position that most guys don't complain about that, or that do complain about it, aren't in a position to do much about it.
Right, his leverage.
Right. Or they're like a Conor McGregor, where Conor, he's making the $20 million a fight, or, 10 or whatever. And so... I'm good now. I'm not worried about anybody else. So, usually when the guys do enter that realm of their pay, and I guess Francis is in a unique situation where he's in a lot of in the driver's seat and he's not being adequately taken care of, especially now watching what the, Logan and Jake Paul are able to, their opponents are making more money than Francis is.
Right. It's interesting. I think the next, they haven't really discussed it. They usually kind of, you win the heavyweight championship and they start making your next fight and getting it out there. They've been talking about John Jones. John Jones is basically unbeaten, except for he has one technical loss,
right?
Because he elbowed someone on the ground or something. I don't even know.
And he was smashing that guy to begin with, and I think the guy, it was already hurt with one of the takedowns. I think he almost dislocated his shoulder. So when they stopped the fight from the illegal down elbow, the guy couldn't continue because of the legal technique that happened to him, not the illegal elbow.
Yeah.
So it's not his fault either. He's like, hey, man, I'm messed up. And if you stop the fight here, it's like, I can't continue.
But he's essentially...
No, he's undefeated.
In a sport where... Oh, Frank was discussing earlier, everyone gets a few losses. He has no losses.
Nope. Wow.
So, and if he can put on that weight, now, I don't know what John Jones is.
I don't think he has to put on too much weight, to be
honest.
You
don't think so?
No, he walks around about 230. I honestly think as long as he shows up at 240, he's so physically strong. I trained with him for two years down in Albuquerque, and phenomenal strength as far as, I always make that type of strength. He's farm boy strong. One day we were doing a plyometric workout, and I outweigh him by 40 pounds, and I still jumped significantly higher than he did. We all did. Travis Brown, Andre Alosky. John actually had a horrible vertical. But if he grabs you, or I tell you, hey, hold on to this pole, don't let go, that dude, you can't get him off you. His static strength just to hold and grip somebody is unbelievable. So for wrestling and for that aspect of MMA, it really pays off. And his fight with Francis, I think that it's Francis has the power to touch anybody and put them lights out, obviously. But John is able to keep up a high pace of fight, which I think that's always counterproductive for Francis because he's just a pure sprinter. So explosive, so ungodly strong, but that comes with a price. His muscular endurance is not that great. So if you watch his first fight with Miocic, the former champ, it was a high-paced first round, and Francis then teetered off, but he's so mentally strong, he was able to stay in the fight for four more rounds, but he was physically washed. In their second fight, because he was able to stop the takedown from Stipe, I think only threw five punches in the whole first round, so for 5 minutes. Francis can fight at that pace all day long. You know, if you're going to throw just a few punches here and there, he's a powerhouse. That's not going to hurt him. It's not going to tax his cardio. Whereas John is so flexible and so good at kicking, I think he'll be able to keep up a higher pace of fighting at a safe distance. And if Francis jumps in too quickly to land a lead hook or a backhand cross, John grabs him. And if John grabs him, and it's over with. You know what I mean? Like, Francis isn't stopping John's takedowns, you know?
It's interesting, John Jones, because I always I like studying guys with real thin calves.
His calves, calves are a little bigger than his ankles.
And he's super strong, though, and it's weird. You guys don't know this about me, but I have that weird leverage strength, and it's a strange thing. It's not to do with muscles or muscle size or anything. It's just about, I think it has to do with balance.
Muscle insertions.
He uses all of his body. That's the whole thing.
And he has like a pretty crazy wingspan, right?
Yeah, and it's just 84 inch reach. But you'll see, it's kind of a weird thing. I know. I always compare it to, if you see Daryl Strawberry swing a baseball bat, or Thomas Hearns throw a right cross. Yeah. It's his whole body is pivoting.
Strawberry uncoils.
He uncoils, right? Where you'd see the guys, you know, the sort of the Pete Rose guys with big forearms and stuff like that. Tight. Yeah, Steve Garvey. It was all their upper body. They didn't have to use. They had strength,
right?
So they didn't need to use all parts of the buffalo. But when you see John, he just sees entire body engaged. It's weird. It's like, is he stronger or is he using a bigger percentage of his body? You know,
John's wrestled for a long time. He's the middle child of two studs that were in the NFL. So I think that he's used to, you know, being pushed around by, you know, so it built up his strength at a young age. But what you're speaking to, and the reason why sometimes you see those guys in the gym or girls who just look much stronger than what they should be. I mean, you see someone, you know, benching 300 pounds, you expect to see, you know, 18-inch arms. And you can see sometimes, I just watched a 145-pound woman bench press 300 pounds.
Really?
Yeah, so like, but it's tendon insertion. Some of it's just, a lot of it is genetic gifts. And I tell people, it's like this. If I'm going to grab a broomstick that's dug into the ground, think that's like your bicep. If I hold high up on the stick or far from the fulcrum point, my leverage is phenomenal, super strong. If I hold lower, it's like kind of holding a baseball at the very tip. It's heavier. I have less leverage. So it's a lot of things when people look at that, I go, oh, it's your tendon insertions. Certain areas where your muscles and tendons insert on your bones, it varies from person to person, and your tendon insertions are beneficial here for X, Y, or Z, whatever sport you're involved in.
Wow. That's a hell of an analysis, by the way. I'm glad I asked about the John Jones. Any predictions of when that fight might happen?
No. I'm bad at that part. I'm great at breaking down fights. If you want to watch a fight with me, I'll tell you what both guys are thinking, what's going on, what they're about to do, why they're doing it, what this guy needs to do. But you're like, hey, so-and-so said this about so-and-so. I'm like, I have no clue. I'm not a Housewives of MMA guy. I'm sorry.
I'd watch that show. Don't go out in those boots. Let me tell you about Podium. Everything is on demand these days. Big movie releases at home, curbside pickup for groceries and delivery. And that's why more than 90,000 local businesses have turned to Podium. Podium makes doing business as easy as sending a text, answering questions, collecting reviews, scheduling appointments or delivery. Payment collection, just send a text. A car dealership, by the way, a dealer just sold a $50,000 truck, and in 4 text messages, they got it sold. Local service professionals, a dentist in New York had a $1 million in overdue collections. He sent everyone a text payment request and collected $700,000 of it in only 2 weeks. It is Podium, right, Dawson?
Today's customers expect on-demand everything, even from local businesses. Stay ahead of the competition with Podium. They have free plans for growing businesses, plus all the power growing businesses need. Plus, all the power growing businesses need to scale. Get started today for free at podium.com/Adam. That's podium.com/Adam.
I should mention that the company is BioXcelerator for the stem cell. How much approximately is it?
You know, you got to get Eric Stafers on here. He'll be able to explain. Stafers much smarter than I am for the different prices, just because it just depends from vary to vary. But I mean, $4,000 or $5,000 for a treatment is you know, roundabout idea for a single joint. To give anybody an idea.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Frank, hang in. We'll do the news right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Big news with Gina. Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, this is something we talked about a lot last year and some predictions. Unfortunately, they were correct. COVID caused damage in a lot of ways in 2020. One of them is with drug overdoses. CBS News reports that 93,000 Americans died of drug ODs last year. That's 21,000 more than the previous high. Experts say that lockdown, further isolated people dealing with addiction, mental issues, and coronavirus restrictions made it harder to get treatment. There's a sociologist, Shannon Monat at Syracuse University, says there's no evidence that drug use actually increased last year. She says these were the two problems, according to her. The increased presence of fentanyl in the drug supply, not just in opioids, and eviction moratoriums and increased unemployment benefits left addicts with more money to buy drugs. Experts say the proliferation of fentanyl means that overdose deaths probably won't drop this year either.
Fentanyl's evil,
scary.
And yeah. I guess it comes in from Mexico, and I guess they set up Chinese labs there, and it's all, it's weird. I don't know. I always feel weird that we're living, you know, when you got hold of me in 1985, you would have been, what is life like in 2021? I'd be like, utopia, there's a monorail, flying cars, out of problems. No, it's just going to be Mexico and mules and fentanyl and people living in shitty apartments that were built
too,
in the 30s.
People turning is not criminals. Your average drug user that, you know, that has an addiction problem, they're not themselves, you know, detrimental to society. They're a victim themselves. I feel bad for them. And then here there's somebody who's a drug addict who has problems, is causing strain on their family, and they think they're just taking, you know, something that like they shouldn't be taking, but again, because it's black market, and now they're dying from these choices, which again, they're not healthy choices. But at the same time, that's like, you know, if randomly people just died from eating a cheeseburger they shouldn't eat, you know, instantly, you know, it's like, well, you know, that's still like, you know, it's bad. I feel, you know, but I feel, you know, the crime definitely isn't worse. The punishment, you know?
Yeah, everyone's dying with the fentanyl, and then also
don't take much.
They're bootlegging all this stuff, and they're branding it, and you can't tell what's the real pills from the fake pills.
That's what happened to the one guy. He gave his daughter, she had like a headache. He gave her one of these pain pills that he thought was a regular, that he had bought a script from somebody type thing. You know, okay, right. Well, this came from a pharmacy. Someone sold me their script, and they were actually bootleg pain pills, and so it killed his daughter.
Jesus. Yeah,
you imagine you had to live with that the rest of your life.
Also, just, you know, it's just a weird, I always think about people who are in the business, like, what do you do? I make bootleg pharmaceuticals, or I have a lab in Mexico. Like, it's like, I don't know. You wonder, like, where's the humanity in it? Yeah. Like, I'm not saying everyone should be Mother Teresa, but like, at a certain point, you just kind of go like, what the fuck am I doing?
Well, yes. And a few years ago in Kansas City, and my mom knew this story very well. I had only heard of it recently from a podcast, that there was a pharmacist at this, you know, next to the hospital in Kansas City. And for whatever reason, I think it ended up obviously being money related, was giving chemo to cancer patients only a third full and the rest with like water in it or something.
Oh, wow.
And they couldn't figure out why none of these cancer patients were having side effects. And they thought it was a miracle. They stumbled upon this new, you know, chemo mixture that doesn't give you side effects. Well, they weren't getting treatment. They all died. I mean,
it was stepping on it.
Was reselling it?
I'm in the middle of the podcast, but it was money related. Okay. He was getting money. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking crazy.
Yeah, I'd like to make a dollar like the next guy, but the idea that I'm directly causing misery and death
to cancer patients.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, hey, I like my kids in private school too, but at a certain point, I got to go to sleep at night.
Exactly.
Just scam your insurance company. Have some dignity.
Right?
iTunes, you know, they have the categories, they got like, you know, comedy and scripted and whatever. They should just have one called Freaking Out the Bitches.
They do. It's called True Crime.
It'd all be true crime, and this guy's cancer treatment. My mom's undergoing chemo treatment. Oh, my God.
You better go with her next time.
You better sniff that shit.
You better taste that shit. Like a good fella. It's supposed to be on his tongue.
That's right.
We all know that that's what it's called.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Jussie Smollett, we haven't heard that name in a while, maintained his innocence on his way to court yesterday, as you hear this, in Chicago, where he faces renewed charges over the alleged 2019 hate crime incident. Smollett told Fox News.
That was only 2019.
I know. That he's innocent.
That was like 10 years ago.
While entering, 2020 was like 57 months long. Referring to the proceedings as a dog and pony show, he was charged again with 6 counts of felony misconduct for allegedly lying to police about a racist, homophobic attack he claims was perpetrated against him. He arrived in court. Judge is going to hear both sides, probably hear something by tomorrow. I'm sure Mark has thoughts.
I should. I'm going to talk to him later today.
That'd be great.
I should ask him about that. Also, as far as the homophobic attacks, I know those guys walk a little differently, but how can we really tell that it's a homophobic attack? You know what I mean? Like the racist attack.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, are we talking about the gay vest again?
That's a black guy. Well, we need to. This is what I'm working toward. We need a gay vest. Right. I'm saying.
So glad you weren't here for that part.
It was a racist, homophobic attack, but you just. It's a racist attack.
Right.
I mean, if it is, it's a hoax, but the point is you don't.
Right.
You wouldn't know if a guy was gay.
That's true.
I can tell.
Maybe
but
happened
most
to the beanie.
Can.
They figured out the way he was yelling. Like, oh, bonus. I can't hate crime on top of my racial crime.
We're living in a good time when there's more racial hoaxes than there are actual racial crimes.
That's good news. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And as we record this, I mean, it's quitting time in Chicago, so they have to know something by now, I would think.
Yeah.
The Tokyo Olympics will look different in a lot of ways, not just no spectators, which we already knew. The International Olympic Committee president, Thomas Bach, said there will be no handshaking and there will be no hugs. Bach also added that the medals you win, you have to put around your own neck.
What?
So no pomp, no circumstance, no fanfare. Athletes, media, and sponsors are the only foreigners allowed at the games. And again, I guess they just, you know, hand you the medal at the end of a broomstick.
You know, I think that's a part that frustrates a lot of people that are critical thinkers. They're like, okay, that just doesn't follow. It makes no sense. You know how many times I'm tired? Because my daughter just won nationals for wrestling, right? She's the first national champion from Nevada.
Wow.
And after every match, after these girls wrestle with each other and they announce the winner, normally after a wrestling match, you shake hands and the winner gets their hand raised. Now they don't shake hands.
They were just rubbing up against
each other. I was about
to
say that.
breathing in each other's mouths.
Exactly. The look on your guys' face is how I was. I was like, wait a minute. So they can't shake hands? No. Don't shake hands. The referee just points to which one they raise their hand. I don't know if you've been watching the last 4 or 5 minutes.
But, that sweat is now
part
of...
Shaking hands is probably the least
you
know, physical contact they've had in this whole, six-minute match. You know?
Yeah, well, this is obviously the part that gets maddening is, you know, I think you hear certain things. Like you go, well, if everyone's in church and they're all singing out loud and they're packed into this area and there's not proper ventilation and everyone's raising their voice for the Lord, you go, I could see breaking that up. But walking on the beach, and this is the thing, I just was at the beach and I actually sent you a picture, I think, Max Zapata, of this. They put the police tape back around the fucking jungle gym that's out in the middle of the sand at the beach club.
Again?
So
yes.
Outdoor sunshine and exercises.
Gonna kill us all.
It's that's it. It's
dumb. See what I mean about consistency?
This is why I hate everyone. Like, just fucking be consistent, you retards.
I agree.
It's like, oh, there's a Delta variant, and someone just tells them, go put the police tape around the, I mean, of course, 7-year-olds playing outdoors in the ocean, in front of the ocean, on the sand would be about the healthiest thing you could do.
Instead,
it's like, go back home and shut the door of your apartment.
Hunker down.
But even with the things like the coffee shops, you close down a coffee shop that's a mom and pop because they have like maybe, what, 30, 40 people go through there in the morning. But yet I can walk, you know, 500 people an hour walking into Costco. I'm like, wait a minute. So is this a bad thing that we're all hanging out? Like what's going on here? Like,
it's just fuzzy math.
Yeah. I'm like, well, why is this guy screwed and this guy's not? I'm like, it's people and numbers. Well, there's a greater amount of numbers on this direction. Mm-hmm. Well, no, but that's okay there. I'm all... Oh, I guess, you know. Okay.
Yeah, they need to get a little more consistent. But again, they fucked everything 10 ways to Sunday. It's like, after you get your vaccination, dignitaries, leaders, president, take your fucking mask off. You want people to get vaccinated? Don't walk around outdoors with your mask elbow bumping other dignitaries when you've all been vaccinated, you
fucking
idiots.
Or being on a Zoom call.
Or Zoom calls with your fucking... Kamala Harris was kissing her masked vaccinated husband on a tarmac through a mask a month and a half ago. Yeah. Like, Jesus Christ.
Like, something like that right there. I'm like, so you're telling me that... You guys, like, that's, like, what are you doing at home?
Yeah, that's
like,
as far
no
as it goes.
Right? Like, so, like, you know, I'm like, hold on a second. So you got to wear a mask to kiss him. You're social distancing from your spouse.
You share
the one that you're probably banging tonight, right? Yeah, like, hopefully. I mean, you know, like.
Yeah.
All goes well.
With a strap on. I know those two. I can sense it. The point is this. Like, her thing is, like, the reason I'm kissing my husband through a surgical mask on a tarmac after we've both been vaccinated is because I'm sending a message. But the message is you're a lying fucking retard.
Yeah, it's a dumb message.
And it's a dumb message. And I don't know who it appeals to. Dumb people? Like, you want people to get vaccinated? Tell them they can get vaccinated, and then they can go on Air Force Two and make out on the tarmac.
Show us what it looks like after you get vaccinated.
Right. And it's then it's that all this thing is sort of like, well, we're putting the tape around this, or we're not letting the guy kayak in the bay alone because it's a message. But what is this message? That's the whole thing. And don't govern that way. Do things that make sense. Don't worry about sending all the messages.
Well, what level are they aiming at? Like, okay, who has to see that message to figure out that's not dumb?
Right. You know,
like, so who are we pandering towards here in that situation? Like, I'm not a child. I feel almost it's kind of like, you know, I got to be home at 10. So you tell your, you know, well, no, at 9:30 because you're assuming I'm going to screw up and be late by a certain amount of time. Well, I mean, like, but who are you in the government to go ahead and make those judgment calls for me that you assume that I'm an idiot? And then I have to be lied to because, okay, well, this isn't what's best for you, but because we know you're going to screw this up, we're going to go ahead and over-exaggerate certain aspects of this.
You know,
God. Just tell me how it is, man.
Yeah, well, maybe I doubt we've learned a lesson, but all right, let's do one more, Gina Grant.
All right. City officials in Burnsville, Minnesota would love people to stop putting their goldfish in the lake, and there are big reasons why. These pet goldfish, and we have pictures, are becoming these giant, like, there's a goldfish in a little goldfish bowl. They're becoming these giant
monsters. They get that big?
Monsters.
There's no way.
Yes.
You've heard the saying, the goldfish grows to the size of the wall.
Exactly.
This is a lake.
That is a goldfish we're looking at. No How many way. Pounds would you say that is? A couple of pounds.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a nice-sized trout, but it's bizarre because it looks like a goldfish.
Yes.
Now I'm wondering what they taste like.
You're a goldfish. During a water quality survey of this lake, Keller Lake, earlier this month, the Associated Press reports that 10 goldfish were discovered. On Monday, an additional 18 were found. Some were 18 inches long, weighed 4 pounds. The city's official Twitter account said, please don't release your pet goldfish into ponds and lakes. They grow bigger than you think and contribute to poor water quality, mucking up the bottom sediments and uprooting plants.
Don't you flush them down the toilet when you're done with them, or is that just when they die?
That's when they die. This is the humane thing to do.
But if you flush them, are they still going to end up in the bay?
That's a good point.
In a filter somewhere?
Probably.
In Minnesota.
I don't know. I kind of like the fella that goes, I'm going to liberate my goldfish. Like, my daughter went off to college.
Yeah.
Mr. Guppy's not gone with her.
Go be free.
I'm tired of feeding him.
Had enough of the shit.
Going down to the lake.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of investment in time, because personally, I'd have been like, I'm flushing it. I mean, for you to get in your car and drive it all the way to the lake, you know, you're a pretty humane human being, I guess. I mean, it's sad that it works out not in the benefit, but you're trying to. But the intention's there.
Yeah, it's burning a lot of calories.
Your heart was in the right place.
I think your heart was in the right place.
And you just thought the thing would be eaten by carp by this afternoon. You didn't know it was going to grow to 5 pounds.
This is the one invasive species, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes. They couldn't find a smaller lake to put it in?
Yeah. Or, now that we know this is how they roll, koi are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Yes. You spend a lot of money on a koi.
Yes.
Why not get a goldfish pond going?
That's smart.
Save yourself some bucks.
That is genius.
Yeah, those things are crazy expensive, right? I mean, you could...
And they look exactly
like
the same.
15, 20 grand on a koi fish. I'm like, wait, say that again?
Yeah.
That fish right there is $25,000. I'm like, it's a fish.
Yeah, this you get for free at the county fair. Comes in a baggie. Yeah. You bring it home. You stock your koi pond
just
with
need
it.
A big enough tank.
It's almost indistinguishable.
Yeah. You know,
the same color.
Yeah, they're the same color.
Yeah. Poor man's
That's
koi.
Why at first, when you first pulled it up, I'm like, okay, it's a hoax.
No.
There has to be some version of a koi fish or something. There's no way that goldfish get that big.
Also,
My 4 Pound Life, the reality show for a goldfish.
Yeah.
In America, even our goldfish are fat.
Right.
A good note to go out on, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
I beat her with a boot. Gina
Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Today's show brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. You can visit O'Reilly Auto Parts today, and the professional parts people help you find the exact battery for your vehicle. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts, or you can visit them at O'ReillyAuto.com. Going to be in doing shows in Raleigh, I should say, North Carolina, coming up this weekend. You go to AdamCarolla.com. Still a couple of tickets left. They're going fast. You go to AdamCarolla.com for all live shows. I'm going everywhere and doing live shows. I should say, for Frank, you can check out the CBD brand, American Shaman, and, of course, Bio Accelerator as well. And go to his website, Frank Mir. It's MIR.com. Frank, fun, man.
Yeah, I enjoyed myself. Thanks. Great conversation.
I completely concur. And until next time, Adam Kroll for Vinny Tortorich, Frank Mir, Gina Grad, and Bull Bryan. Say it. Mahalo.
The first nut is the best nut.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Check out Gina Grad on the podcast Easy Listening, Paul Bryan on the podcast The Film Vault, the rest of us on the podcast The Water Cooler. And get your tickets to see the Ace Man. Everything you need is up at AdamCarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save big money.